This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Tuberculosis is a preventable, curable disease, yet it kills 4,000 people a day worldwide. Once common here, today TB is uncommon in the U.S. with 200,000 cases a year. In the developing world, it continues to be a scourge. TB is caused by a bacterium and typically responds to antibiotics, but untreated, it can be fatal, and many people can have TB and not even know it. San Antonio has a long history with TB, and it's still a problem here. But there is also research being conducted in San Antonio to continue the battle against TB. What questions do you have about tuberculosis? Have you ever been diagnosed with TB? How did you deal with that? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon. We have Dr. Lisa Armitage. She is the medical consultant at the Heartland National TB Center here in San Antonio. Dr. Larry Schlesinger, he is the president and CEO of the Texas Biomedical Research Institute. Tommy Camden is here, health program manager for City Chest Clinic, which is a part of Metro Health. And Alicia Wayne is a former tuberculosis patient. And our phone lines are open again. The number is 210-614-8980. So Dr. Schlesinger, let me go to you first, since you have been working on TB for a long time. When someone says, I have tuberculosis, I just got this diagnosis, how freaked out should they be?
So tuberculosis is a bacterial infection. Most commonly, it's a pneumonia. It's a serious infection. So I think when given that diagnosis, the patient needs to take that very seriously. Having said that, if the bacteria is susceptible to really an armamentarium of drugs that we have and stays under doctor's care, has appropriate management and oversight, TB is curative. So it should be thought about as a serious bacterial infection, but one that you can get over.
So if a person says, I have TB, then they've already beat half their problem. They know they have TB.
Well, that's exactly right. The biggest problem with TB is the unknowing case in the community, since this is a human-to-human transferable infection. Somebody who has pneumonia and coughs out the bacteria, it can be inhaled into a susceptible individual who doesn't know the person they're talking to has TB.
Right. So that's the other thing. We've got to realize we have to contain it and keep in the spread of it.
That's right. I mean, so, you know, active surveillance programs that you'll hear about in this hour, I'm sure, are a very important part of tuberculosis. One of the things I would say, though, is doctor's care critical, because really understanding what type of bacteria you have causing your tuberculosis helps us understand how to treat it. And so that becomes quite critical.
I read about the concern about antibiotic-resistant yeah. TB. How big of an issue is that?
So this is a growing problem. It's a worldwide problem. Remember, tuberculosis is a global infection. Although in the United States, I was just tracking this, in the last 4 years, there have been nearly 30 small outbreaks of TB in the United States. So it's not just somewhere else. But in the world, it's still one of the top 10 killers of humans and the number one bacterial cause of death in the world. So it's really an ongoing scourge, just as you said at the beginning.
So we know that TB used to be really, really bad in the United States. And San Antonio was historically a place people would come to be treated for tuberculosis in the 1800s. What changed?
You know, around the turn of the 20th century, probably about a third of Americans died of tuberculosis, a very prevalent infection early in the 20th century. A number of things changed. One, the recognition this was communicable, and the development of these sanatoria where people were removed from close social contact in the environment, and really the beginnings of drugs that would treat these patients. And the acknowledgement that they had tuberculosis. Health conditions generally improving in the 20th century also played a big role, since being healthy, having nutrition is key in getting over TB. All these things happened, and that led to a dramatic reduction in TB in the United States.
And Dr. Lisa Armitage over at the Heartland National TB Center here in San Antonio. Tell me about the Heartland National TB Center.
So the Heartland National TB Center is one of four CDC-sponsored centers. We're recognizing that the number of cases are coming down, and that you may have several there are actually several cases in the U.S., but the number of cases that a single physician will see and recognize is getting to be smaller. So you see things that are more familiar. You see infections with common bacteria, and you know how to manage those. But when you have a rarer case of TB, the number of cases coming down means that it's a little bit harder for the physicians sometimes to recognize. So when the cases are more complicated, we have a center where individual physicians can call. We manage 9 states in the Heartland Center, and they can call in at any time, and we can help them with how to manage patients appropriately. More so that we can get them treated and back to their families as quickly as possible.
Every once in a while, we get a story of that some kid turned out tested positive for TB in some middle school somewhere, and there's pandemonium. Everybody's in a hot top news item. People, TB, but they don't even really know what they're talking about. TB, but what is that? I don't know, but it sounds bad. And then they call you in to help track it down and do the testing, right?
Yes. So the City Chest Clinic here in San Antonio goes in and tests the individuals who may have been potentially exposed.
So what's the level of freak out that's appropriate when they say, a kid at my school tested positive for TB?
The level of freak out really should be low. We screen anyone who may have been in the airspace with the child, but for the most part, we're going to get in there and we're going to keep everybody safe. But I think the one thing that people need to understand is it takes a little while to expose someone to the bug. So casual contact is not going to be something that you need to be really concerned about. If you saw that kid in a large cafeteria, that's not really an exposure. It's mostly the people who are close to that person, and that's the people that we screen the most aggressively.
Okay, if I'm in an elevator with some guy that's hacking up weird things, how should I get off the next floor?
Probably he has something else you don't want, like the flu or a common cold, but TB, probably not.
But you do a lot of training at your facility, teaching people how to track TB. What are they looking for?
A lot of it is education and understanding that patients who have a longer, history of cough. So if you have the flu, you're going to cough for about 2 weeks and then it should get better. But after 3 weeks of cough, that's when you start wondering if there are other causes. And so we're training physicians to say longer periods of cough, night sweats, fevers, chills, and this has persisted past the 3 weeks you would expect with a common cold or the flu. Then you need to be looking for other causes, and TB is one of them that you need to consider.
We've seen in movies, people have the handkerchief after coughing, and it's like, it's red. That means it's blood, and I'm going to die.
Yeah, TB has a tendency to want to erode into places, and it can hit a blood vessel, and people do cough blood. And it's funny, people will cough for months, and they'll tell me, it's a smoker's cough, allergies. But the minute they cough up a drop of blood, they'll come in. And I highly recommend that would be a symptom that you want to pay attention to.
All right, that is the red flag.
Yes.
The red handkerchief. That means go see your doctor, take care of this right away. We're going to talk more about testing for TB here in San Antonio, and also the personal experience of a tuberculosis patient and how they beat it, and what you need to know about your family and what you need to know about for your own personal health care when it comes to TB. If you get a question, a comment, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. And we're talking about tuberculosis nationwide, globally, and here in Bexar County. Bexar County is one of the hotspots for tuberculosis, both as a way that we have some people here who test positive for it, but also there's a lot of research going on locally trying to figure out how we can beat tuberculosis around the world. We invite your phone calls. Have you been diagnosed with TB ever in your life? How did you deal with that? Are you part of the teams out there looking to keep our community safe from TB? The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And San Antonio, Bexar County Metropolitan Health have long been working to keep our community safe from tuberculosis and helping those who have tested positive for it. And so let me turn to Tommy Camden. He's the health program manager for the City Chest Clinic, which is part of Metro Health. And Tommy, welcome to The Source.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
So tell me about the City Chest Clinic. What do you do?
Well, the City Chest Clinic is part of the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, and really the health district is charged by state law, city code, as well as county resolution to provide public health services in the county of Bexar County. So our function with the tuberculosis clinic is really to find those patients that are out there that have been diagnosed with tuberculosis. Many times they're still in the hospital. We'll go out, interview those patients, try and figure out where they work, who they've associated with, and then begin those kind of contact investigations.
So you do like detective work a little bit.
It's a lot of surveillance, detective work, a lot of questions, a lot of close interaction with the patient to figure out where they've been. And that really goes back, it may go back several months back in order to really get a better picture of where those patients have actually been and who they've interacted with.
So someone turns up in a hospital, they have acute tuberculosis symptoms, and they call you in and saying, okay, we need you to get to work on this case. And then you do sort of look at, you draw a diagram, like a network of who this person works, who they do
well,
come in contact
typically,
with?
Well, typically our case investigators will go into the hospital, interview the patient. We definitely want to know where they work, who they associate with, do they go to church, do they spend significant amounts of time in particular organizations or groups of people. And then that'll kind of start that part of the detective work. So
does it work the phones and say, give me a list of people that you come in contact with?
Yes, we need specific names, people, contact information, phone numbers. Many times some of these patients may associate with people they may not know their names. They may spend significant amounts of time in a particular area, but they may not know that person's name. But we can at least try and get a description and try to track some of those people down. For example, there may be homeless people that we work with that may be living under a bridge. So that may be the place that we actually have to initiate part of that contact investigation would be anywhere that anyone that may be living in that particular part of the city.
So how do you approach someone and tell them that an individual that they have been in contact with has tested positive for tuberculosis and is symptomatic, and you tell them we need to test you, or what do you do?
Typically, when we go in, whether we're working with individuals or organizations, confidentiality is utmost important. So the name of the actual index case that actually has a tuberculosis, that remains confidential. But we let the people know that they've been named as a potential contact to tuberculosis. There's a lot of education that goes on at that point, just trying to let them know that tuberculosis is a very serious disease, that they need to be tested. At Metro Health, we can provide that testing, whether it be a tuberculin skin test or interferon gamma globulin or IGRA test, which is a blood test for tuberculosis. We can provide those types of testing to those individuals to at least get them screened to find out whether or not they have been exposed or not.
I remember reading a lot about chest x-rays. They still do chest x-rays?
We do chest x-rays on all the suspects.
If
they have a positive...
What's a bad chest x-ray look like? It's got a lot of blotches and stuff, like some sort of...
Dr. Armitage would be more...
Okay.
She reads the chest x-rays all the time, but
A bad chest x-ray look
there
like?
There are holes in the lung.
The chest x-ray, interestingly, the black is good. They're clear. Most of what you see is white representing the ribs and then the heart. And then anything else in there, usually, like you said, patches. But TB likes to poke holes in things. So sometimes we see a cavity, a little cave right in the middle of the chest.
Wow. And so Dr. Schlesinger, I'm sure in autopsies, looking at people's lungs after they've, it looks like their lungs have been beaten up, I bet.
Oh, yeah. Severe cases of TB have had, just as Dr. Armitage said, have had a lot of extensive destruction of their lung tissue. So it's pretty... pretty intense when you see it at that level. But tuberculosis manifests various different ways in the lung. And if you happen to have another infectious disease or infection like HIV, that can change the pattern of the abnormalities on the chest X-ray. So that's part of the problem, that the chest X-ray can have an atypical pattern. You won't necessarily think about TB. It requires an index of suspicion by the clinician, an experienced clinician.
So I think everyone has had the experience of being skin tested for TB. They put a little like multi-pronged DDAD into your skin, and you come back a few days later, and if it's inflamed, you've got it. Is that how that works?
Well, you're showing your age a little bit, Dave.
Okay. I show it very well.
The multi-pronged test, the Tyne test, was done and actually required many public schools in America, but it had some non-specificity to it. It's hard to administer. So now it's a single needle, and it raises a bleb on the skin. So it needs to
like
be
a little
done,
blister.
A little blister on the skin. And what you're looking for, actually, is the body's immune system responding to what you put in the skin, which is a little piece of the TB bacteria. And that immune response, which occurs typically over 48 to 72 hours after the test, gives the clinician an understanding that they've seen that TB bacteria before. So it really can give a clue that this is tuberculosis. It can make the diagnosis of both latent infection and active tuberculosis, a sick patient. So if somebody has all the symptoms that you've already heard about, then the test can be positive. But even if they're healthy and have been exposed, the test can be positive.
So let's talk to our patient, the person who had tuberculosis, and now they're well, Alicia Wayne. How did you know that you had TB?
I actually was 8 months pregnant, and I went into labor. And I was actually at that time extremely sick. I had very low weight. I actually hadn't seen a physician in the amount of time I should have seen one. And when I went in to deliver, I guess the nurses and them in the room noticed how sick I was. And they actually, as soon as I delivered, they took my son at the time, they took him out of the room and put me into an isolation room. And I actually stayed there for several hours waiting to know my fate of what was going on before they came in, started doing some testing and took me for x-rays and things like that. And it was actually a little while before they actually gave me the diagnosis of TB, but they started the medications right away, which was intense.
So you were living on the streets, right?
I was.
And so you think, why does living on the streets sort of, how does that spread TB? I mean, because you're living in stressed situations?
Right. The living on the streets doesn't necessarily, you know, so I would say that folks who have unstable housing will pretty much sleep where they can, somewhere that's safe, somewhere that's closed in, especially if it's cold. So that might put you in close quarters with someone else who has TB. So the other thing is that also it's very stressful. So TB takes advantage of the fact that the body is stressed, and it will use that to tip the immune system in its favor.
So you go from latency to lookout.
Right. So latency, where the bug is just kind of hiding and your immune system has the upper hand, now you're stressed and you've stressed the system to use those resources for other things, and it can get loose.
Is pregnancy also something that can trip it over?
We're getting more data to suggest that the permissiveness of pregnancy, so that you don't reject, you know, your child, also does do some alterations to the immune system that may put you at more risk.
And so, Alisa, they said, you have TB, and we're going to treat you for it. And what did you think? What would you say, TB, and what went off in your mind?
Huh? Really, I guess at that point, too, I do have to say that because of when I was homeless and living on the streets and went in, and it was almost like a present of some sort in my case, because they're like, you have TB, guess what, we're going to keep you here in the hospital, and you know, we're going to house you and feed you,
stabilize you,
right? Exactly. And so we're going to get you well, and so at that point I kind of just started asking a lot of questions, and surprisingly there's not a lot of literature to give TB patients at that time, and this was years ago. And so I just started asking a lot of questions to the physicians and the nurses and things like that. So
And how do they beat it? Just through pharmaceuticals?
Yes, through pharmaceuticals. Of course, I was in Dallas at the time. When
antibiotics?
Antibiotics, lots of them. You start off with a lot of them, and then you end with a few of them. So,
could you notice a change in your general health as you?
Yes, I went from barely being able to walk and stand, and I couldn't keep water down, food down. My body was 105 degrees all the time, to actually being able to keep water down. I mean, just thinking about trying to take a drink of water and your body immediately rejecting it. But being on the medications helped me get through that, helped me start eating. I went from 85 pounds to like 150 pounds in 7 months.
You think that pregnancy saved your life?
I think that pregnancy did save my life.
And getting some help from some people that were, and how do they treat you? How do they make you feel?
great. Actually, it was wonderful. I mean, people, you know, they were completely aware that this is a situation that people are not, you don't know a lot about. And so, you know, they're like answering your every question. Oh, do you want, you know, if I told my physician, oh my gosh, that looks good, that pizza on the television, he's like, okay, order it up. You know, would tell the nurses at the hospital, order her a pizza. She wants to eat some food. Just having the medications and all
that. Did that really happen with the pizza?
It did. Because I wouldn't eat anything. And finally, one day I saw a commercial, I think, for Chinese food. It was the first one. I told my doctor, that looks so good. And soon enough, he had it delivered, and it was great. So, but that's how, you know, helpful they really were. And, you know, there's a lot of other programs that go along with it, when, especially because I was an inpatient here at Texas Center for Infectious Disease. So there's a lot of other things there, nutrition-based stuff, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous groups, Narcotics Anonymous groups, activities to just kind of get you back into being in the regular world, I guess you could say.
So it seems like that TB, Dr. Armitage, is a condition, a disease that has this matrix of other issues that are involved, for pregnancy or also drug use and other things that can. So you don't just, you're not just treating TB, but you have to treat the entire individual.
Right. I would say that, you know, having a lot of other things going on makes it more complicated. And it usually that's what delays the diagnosis. So folks who have health insurance, they'll cough for a while. And after about 3 weeks, they'll go back to their physician. They'll say, for example, I'm still coughing. And so after, you know, a round of the standard antibiotics are not working, they get a chest x-ray, and then you'll see some hints that there is TB. When you're living on the streets, you don't have a lot of resources. You don't have a lot of individuals that are willing to help, and your health can deteriorate much more rapidly. But yes, absolutely, it's important to treat everything about the patient to help them focus on their treatment. And most folks inherently want to get better. So you get them in, you sit down, and you explain to them what's going on. You treat them with respect. This is their body, and you tell them, I want to help you make it better. And they'll work with you. And so, yes, all of those things are important.
And Lisa, now you're on the other end of it. You're working to help people with TB.
I am.
What is your job title?
I'm a program specialist for Heartland National TB Center.
And do you tell people when they come in, and I was where you were at?
Yes. Whenever I'm given the opportunity, I actually, I will go and speak to them about, you know, it's okay to be in this situation, and this is what you can do to help you, and this is what the medications are going to be like, and this is how you're going to feel after this, and, you know, you're going to be thankful for all of this. So.
And if you see something on TV that really makes you hungry, let me know.
Yes, absolutely. We'll get you whatever you want.
Okay. All right. Within reason. All right. If you see a steakhouse commercial, we'll have to think twice. All right. We're going to take a quick break. The number to call in if you got a question or a comment is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We've got a question about TB, how it's treated, how it impacts households, how we can make sure that we try to we stay on top of tuberculosis in our community, in our nation, and around the world. The Source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about tuberculosis this afternoon, tuberculosis in Bexar County. This is one of the counties that's a hotspot for this infectious disease. Got a question or comment, call in. The number is 210-614-8980. It's important to highlight that this is a preventable, curable disease. We just have to make sure that people are aware of it. And let's go to a caller, and this is Russell. And see, Russell, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I'm a government employee, and I have deployed twice to Iraq. During my very first tour in Iraq, I came back, at least I think I had contracted TB, which I did because it was confirmed. And I went back again, but when I returned back from Iraq the second time, my right eye started bleeding, In fact, it looked like a retina tear, but the doctors here at the military base, the ophthalmologist was convinced that it was a product of this infectious disease that I had caught in the Middle East. I've had four operations on my right eye, and it stopped the bleeding, but I still have this floater sitting in front of my macula. They are convinced here in San Antonio, the doctors that had treated me, an ophthalmologist, that it was directly related to the TB. What are your thoughts about this? Is this possible, or what am I looking at here? And I'm wondering whether or not the TB was actually cured the first time with my treatments.
And so you're considered to be TB-free now, Russell?
I am considered TB-free, but the fact is I'm still being treated for this Ehlers disease, this retina tear.
All right.
That I've had in my eyes. And again, the doctor, the retina specialist, is okay. convinced that this is directly related to the infectious disease that I caught in the Middle East.
Russell, thank you for the call. We appreciate that. Now, we're not really going to be able to provide you with direct medical advice. I mean, the doctors who are on your case, they're going to be able to do that. We're not able to do that. But let me switch over to Dr. Larry Schlesinger, the president and CEO of the Texas Biomedical Research Institute. And a lot of complications can come from tuberculosis. Is this something that has turned up in your experience?
Yeah. Just as you said, Dave, it's very difficult to put this case together. The manifestation that the caller describes is unusual relative to TB, but not impossible. The thing to know about TB is you inhale it into the lungs, and it can take up shop, and it can...
Because it's a nice, warm, moist place. That's just like bacteria is like, yum, yum. I love that place.
The lungs are particularly susceptible to not only TB, but other infections. That's true. And so the bacteria can spread outside the lungs. And as already stated, the immune system keeps in check. In fact, most people who get TB stay healthy throughout their life. It's only in otherwise healthy individuals about 5 to 15% of people who get symptoms of tuberculosis like pneumonia, et cetera. But because the bacteria can go around the body.
It's like the extrapulmonary TB.
That's right. It's called extrapulmonary, and it's still the immune system keeping it in check. And if your immune system wanes for one reason or another, infection, immunosuppressive therapy, et cetera, the bacteria can wake up outside the lungs. And it can wake up in unusual organs.
Like in bones and places like that.
Bones, kidneys. And so there are cases where it can wake up in the eye. It's very difficult hearing this case to know for sure whether it's related, but it's not impossible.
But Russell brings up an interesting point. He went to a foreign land and had to did a job, and we appreciate your help in their service for the country. But what is it about? We hear this all the time, though, when we talk about limiting people coming into the United States from other parts of the world because they can bring TB with them. And so let me ask Dr. Lisa Armitage about that. She's a medical consultant at the Heartland National TB Center. Is this something that you've heard and that you pay attention to?
Generally, the cases that we see in the U.S., most of the folks who develop TB disease have been part of our country for about the last 20 plus years. They immigrated here, many of them in the 80s and the 90s, came here legally, were U.S. citizens, now have children and grandchildren of their own here in this country. But they still had latent disease from when they were younger and basically in countries with much higher rates. So we see a lot of those, and it does, you know, kind of press at the point, you know, when we have foreign-born individuals, is that putting U.S. citizens at risk? I will say with TB, the greater number that you're going to see are going to be individuals who are already members of our society. They're our folks who are here. And interestingly enough, if you ask older folks who were born and raised here, many of them remember a time when there were the TB sanatoria. I remember having a conversation with my mom, and I grew up in Houston, and there was a big Sears and Roebuck downtown on Main Street. And they used to bring a van up with a chest x-ray machine, and they would just park out there, and individuals could come in and get a chest x-ray. So we've kind of, you know, changed the way we approach TB, but it was just interesting that my mom in her lifetime still remembers that. And
Sure. At one point, we just kind of didn't get a chance to emphasize when we were talking about Alisa Wayne's story that you actually were diagnosed in Dallas, right?
Yes, correct.
And so, and you had to come to San Antonio for the treatment.
Yes.
Okay. And so why that? Why did you come to San Antonio, doctor?
So San Antonio has the only freestanding TB hospital in the nation, and it is right here, the Texas Center for Infectious Diseases. So any Texas resident who can't be managed at their home health department can be transferred here for basically what we call a higher level of care. So if there's, you know, if Alisa was struggling with some substance abuse or she was homeless and didn't have a place to stay, we brought her here and worked on pretty much her, you know, her whole state of being. She came in, we got her nutrition improved, we fixed her TB. But while she's here, and we know that TB is going to take a minimum of 6 months, but up to 9 months, sometimes 12 months to cure, then that's a long time for us to work with her on any of her life issues. And it worked out very well for Heartland as she ended up, you know, coming to work with us and has been a big part on us educating other physicians.
And Tommy Camden, at the health program manager for the City Chest Clinic, part of Metro Health here in San Antonio, do people, are you declared TB free? Are you cured? Is that what you're striving for? Is that the outcome?
Yes. Once the patients go through the therapy and receive all the medications that have been diagnosed, then they're essentially declared TB free at that point.
And do they have any latent types of issues that they have to be aware of, Dr. Armitage?
Absolutely not. Once we've treated a person and they have cured, unless there is something that makes them more susceptible, like another hit on their immune system and another exposure. So, you know, TB takes up residence in the body, and it'll sometimes have a latent phase where it's just kind of, we say, hiding. So it's in there, and it's active, but your immune system has it in check. So in order for a person who already has TB that gets cured of TB, and every patient that comes into that clinic, we aim for cure. We accept no less.
So I want to reflect again on what you were just saying earlier about people who are coming in from other countries, maybe from developed parts of the world, and accusations that they can be bringing TB with them. So I just want to see if I got this right. TB is already here. They're not bringing anything to Texas or the nation that's not already here.
Right.
And they're not going to increase the load of TB that we have, because most of these people are, if they have TB, it's going to be latent TB. And if it becomes active, it's going to be much later in life, much like it would be for anyone else in the United States.
Yes.
So and it's also really not a talking point then to say that this is a reason why we should limit refugees or migration from other parts of the world because they're going to have TB.
Exactly. And another point to say, we actually, individuals who want to enter our country have to be screened.
Okay. And so, but you know, right now we have a flu going around, and that's it's a pretty severe flu that's happening. It's stressing our emergency rooms and ambulances and all sorts of things. So, Dr. Schlesinger, is a flu something, if you have latent TB, can that be a trigger to look out for?
Sure. There are a number of triggers that can wake up TB, if you will, and that could be one of them. But I think what's more important is that people who are hearing this story and have lung symptoms or now thinking about tuberculosis have to go see their doctor, because it's likely during this season they have flu and not TB. But it is clearly a stress to the system. We are having a lot of flu this year, so there is a relationship. I wanted to come back to one point about latency and the term latent TB infection, because that is the primary outcome of being infected with TB. Why is it important to find those individuals? It's important because if we intervene with a medication with somebody who's healthy with latent TB, the treatment course is much simpler. It's still a matter of months, but it's a simple course, and it markedly reduces your risk of ever getting sick with TB. So the time to really identify people is when they're healthy with latent infection, their nutrition status is good, and they can receive one or two pills for a period of months and really reduce their risk to reactivate later when they may be at higher risk for getting active TB. That's a really critical point.
But if I have a latent TB in my system, is that doing anything to make me feel less well? Am I going to, knock me down just a couple of points in my wellness?
Not really. People are healthy with latent TB, and that's why, you know, if you're screened because of employment, you know, the story you often hear is, I didn't know that, that I have a positive test. So it's really doesn't have any signs or symptoms or impact, but yet it's critical to be treated because of what I stated a few moments ago.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about some of the work that's being done here locally, addressing vaccines and other research to fight tuberculosis. The number to call in is 614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're going to be right back after this one-minute break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, and we're talking about tuberculosis. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. You may not be aware, but San Antonio is a place where there's a ton of interesting research being done to fight tuberculosis. It's also a place where we have a number of cases. And so with me is Dr. Larry Schlesinger, President and CEO of the Texas Biomedical Research Institute. You guys do a lot of fascinating research out there looking at some of the world's most toughest infectious diseases, but one of them is tuberculosis. What are y'all looking at?
That's exactly right. I am new to San Antonio. I've been here about 6 months. I'm very fortunate in that some of my colleagues have joined me here at Texas Biomed, and we now have a team of about 15 people working on research in tuberculosis, and we'll be growing to over 20. So TB, there's good news and bad news. The good news is because of the resurgence of tuberculosis that goes back a couple of decades, there is a lot more research going on, particularly in trying to identify new drugs to treat multi-drug and extensively drug-resistant TB. And in addition, there are now some vaccine candidates going through the pipeline. Tricky bug, though, it's evolved in humans over centuries, and therefore it's really learned how to exploit our body's immune system, and it's the immune system that gives us the symptoms, the fever, the weight loss. So going to be a real challenge to get to a real vaccine.
So I thought that vaccines are for viral infections, viruses. So once you teach the body how to fight something, you know, it's figured it out, and so I can't get polio a second time. But this is a bacterium, so how do you have a vaccine for that?
Oh, there are vaccines. So Pneumovax is something people know about for pneumococcus. So you hear it on television all the time.
I don't pay attention to those. Anything on TV, I don't believe. Especially those ads. They all look too happy being infected.
But no, I think the ultimate eradication of an infection is to have an effective vaccine. The problem we have is that we have a vaccine for TB. It's called the BCG vaccine. It's a live attenuated vaccine. It's actually a kind of a meager form of mycobacteria. It's the number one vaccine given out in the world. It's been given out since 1924. But it's only effective about 50% of the time overall. And now there are vaccine candidates that look like they may be more promising than the BCG vaccine. That's very exciting.
Okay, here's a caller. This is Francis. And Francis, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Okay. I'd like to know if there's a clinic for TB testing for people without health insurance. And I know that you can go to a CVS and get a patch testing, but I had influenza within the past month, so that knocks me out of that testing.
Okay, Francis. So Tommy Camden is here with Metro Health. He's the health program manager for the City Chest Clinic.
Generally speaking, most of the clientele that go through the initial screening is that's provided by the private providers that are out in the community. We do have one program called the Breathe Easy South Texas 1115 Waiver Project that does target high-risk individuals to get them in, to get them screened and to be tested for TB. But typically, you would have to fall into one of the high-risk categories, such as being a diabetic, experiencing homelessness, being immunocompromised, or being a part of a congregate setting. But that particular program, we can provide that screening free of charge. If you fall into those high-risk categories, you would need to call our clinic to find out where we would be offering those services. And for those that are outside of Bexar County, this project actually covers about a 19-county area. So we do that in partnership with Texas Department of Health Region 8 as well as University Hospital to push that project out outside of Bexar County as well.
So call. Pick up the phone and call you, right?
The easiest way would be to call our main office, which would be area code 210-207-8823. You could also speak with Norma Santos, who kind of heads up part of that project. That number is 210-207-8957. And if you live outside of Bexar County, then you would need to speak with the Region 8 State Health Department, and you could call Yolanda Cantu at area code 210-949-2074.
We're going to have all of these numbers and contacts on our website at tpr.org when we post the show in about 45 minutes. So, yeah, if you missed those numbers, we'll have those posted for you. Here's Lupe. Lupe's called in. Hey there. You're on The Source. Go ahead.
Yes. I had an uncle who had TB, tested positive for TB, and they gave him the regimen of medicine. Unfortunately, he didn't take it off, and so later on he started working and ended up getting sick with stomach cancer, and he did die, unfortunately. But could that TB bacteria, could that have caused him contact or get sicker quicker? Because it was a matter of months that it just went downhill for him.
Lupe, thank you for the call, and I'm sorry to hear about your uncle. Dr. Schlesinger, I know you can't talk about that case in particular, but you can talk about some of the issues that this raises.
Well, if I understand correctly, the caller is asking whether there's a relationship between the TB treatment and the development, unfortunate development of cancer.
Yes.
I think it's highly unlikely that there's a relationship there.
But maybe it could have been the other way around.
Could have been the other way around, and her immune system was compromised and put her at risk to get the infection. That's a possibility. But I think she it was an unfortunate coincidence in this case, most likely.
But she, Lupe mentioned that her uncle did not take the entire regimen of the tuberculosis antibiotics. And talk about why that is.
Absolutely.
That should not be followed.
So two things. In latent infection, which is what I'm promoting is the best time to treat, you really need to take the drug optimally for 9 months, although people can take it for 6 months. But you really need to take it for all that time to significantly reduce your risk. If you don't take it for all that time, and I know it's very difficult, right? It's hard to take a Z-Pak for an infection. If you don't take it for all that time, you don't get the protection necessary.
Is this like pills or what?
These are pills. Now, on the other hand, with active tuberculosis, the problem is that if you don't take all the drugs as prescribed, then about 1 in a million of those bacteria will actually be resistant and will grow up because you didn't take the drugs properly, and you then will develop resistant TB, which is much more difficult to treat. So it's critical you take all your medicines.
So just one little bugger survives. He's like the toughest guy of the tough. And so suddenly he doesn't have any competition down there, and he's just going to explode. And suddenly you've got and he can become contagious and spread it to other people. And now they've got that tough bugger in their lungs, and it's really hard to beat.
Exactly right.
All right, so we got to tell people, take the entire, all the medicine they give you.
Take the medicine and be under doctor's care, because you can have some toxicities from taking the medicine. Not everybody can tolerate it. So you need experienced clinicians to guide you through that therapy. And I need to put a plug in for what you've been hearing today about TCID and the unique expertise of managing difficult case of TB in San Antonio, Texas. I think this is a big plus, unique plus for the city.
Take advantage of it. And this is Mary. Mary's called in. Hey, Mary, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
I would like to give a shout out to TCID. My garden club has been doing a Christmas cheer project out there for many years, and I have had a lot of interactions with the employees there. And I have never met a more giving group of people.
Well, Mary, and tell us more. We love hearing this type of stuff, so I'm going to pump you for more.
Okay. Well, I don't know whether they want me to say this or not, but it is a state organization, and they are given their clothing and things like that by the state. And they have a little thrift shop out there that they try to get some donations from so they can get more things for the patients there. And we have, this garden club has tried to work with the TCID in getting them toiletries and things like that, which are always needed.
Mary, you're getting a lot of nodding heads. People here really appreciate your phone call. Thanks for calling in. Do you want to follow up on that, Dr. Elise Armitage?
The TCID, that's the community around people like, you know, Mary, the lady who called in, and I just want to express my appreciation to her for, you know, not just the things that she does, but for her willingness to share. But the community is engaged with, you know, the patients who are there, and there's really just kind of a rounding up to not only heal their body, but I would say to heal them spiritually, some to know that other individuals care for them, and to see other people come in and see that it's important that they do what they do.
And Lisa Wayne, you went through that process.
I did go through
that
process.
How do you feel about all that?
I think it was outstanding. It's definitely an awesome opportunity to have that here in San Antonio, to be able to have, I mean, Heartland be involved with the consultation part of it, and then TCID with, you know, all the people they do, and then their voluntary group that's there that helps do with all the clothing, and, you know, they do activities and movies and things like that just to kind of keep everybody involved.
Did you ever think that when you were diagnosed and you were dealing with your pregnancy and having all those issues that you would be here today, be on this side of things, helping people?
Nope, I sure did not. I'm sure thankful for it, though.
It's been quite a journey.
It has been.
All right. Well, I want to thank all of our guests this afternoon. Dr. Lisa Armitage, she's the medical consultant at the Heartland National TB Center here in San Antonio. Dr. Larry Schlesinger is the president and CEO of Texas Biomedical Research Institute, and now a member of San Antonio after 6 months here. Welcome to the club here. Tommy Camden, health program manager for the City Chest Clinic at Metro Health San Antonio, and Elisa Wayne, a former TB, now TB-free patient. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.